everyone. Welcome to the Canadian Space Society podcast, Space A. I'm your host, Mahima, and today we're back with another episode exploring space medicine work happening at the European Space Agency. And we're going to be chatting today with Jérémine Vaque, who is currently enrolled in an internship at the European Space Agency in the space medicine team. She is currently located in Germany and is a medicine student herself and is also working towards a master's in microbiology, medical science, and infection biology from Uppsala University. Her current role at the ESA is doing a comprehensive review of the biological effects of space radiation and the purpose of advancing radiation protection strategies for ESA astronauts on missions to the moon and Mars, and overall enhancing the safety of humankind peaceful space exploration. So it's a really fascinating mission that she's on, and we're really excited to have her. So hi, Jérémine, really nice to meet you, and thanks so much for being on the podcast today. How are you?
Hi, Mahima. I'm fine. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here. So let's start with your current role as an ESA intern. So tell me a bit more about your journey up to this point and how you actually secured this internship at the ESA.
So the European Space Agency every year around November held a campaign of recruitment, so gathering applications for internships across engineering roles, but also in the space medicine team. And I applied last year and got a mail inviting me to an interview, went through the application process and got in.
That's amazing. Yeah. And it's pretty exciting that you're working in the space medicine team. So let's talk a little bit more about your current work and your current project. So this is a project that's currently undergoing. I also am a volunteer on this project, helping out with the systematic review. But let's get more detailed into what the project actually is. So currently, ESA is looking at sex differences of ionizing radiation. So I want to ask you a bit more about how this project came about, why this specific project was chosen by the space medicine team. And then let's talk a little bit more about how you're actually getting the general public involved doing this crowdsourced systematic review, and maybe how other people can also be involved in this.
Great. So I'm going to introduce the project because it's a very big work that is going on for a couple of years already. It was already going when I arrived. So the idea is that we need to study radiation's effects on the human body more comprehensively, given that there are current projects for space exploration that go beyond low Earth orbit. You may or may not know that in space there is a really significant health risks coming from radiations from the sun, from solar nuclear events, from also the background of the universe. And when you leave Earth, you go through the Earth radiation belt. This is impacting you, but it is also protecting you when you're closer to Earth. And if you cross this, you're exposed to more radiations. So given that, for instance, with the Artemis program, there is an ambition to go explore the moon, to go to Mars, to go beyond low Earth orbit and beyond this radiation belt, it is important to study radiations because it's going to be a topic that it's a potential showstopper because it's so harmful on human beings. So we need to find solutions. And for that, we need to study the effects themselves.
Regarding sex differences, what is interesting to know is that until recently, sometimes women were allowed less total time in space during their astronaut career than men. Some data gathered, for instance, among the cohorts of survivors from Hiroshima and Nagasaki, suggested that women could be more at risk of radiation-induced cancer. So today, we know very well that the effects of radiations on the human body are not limited to cancer risks. And we also developed new objective scientific methodologies, and we discovered some bias even in the cancer risk results from those Hiroshima and Nagasaki cohorts. And this is just an example, but the point is that medical recommendations regarding radiation exposure in space exploration are based on old and often incomplete data. We need to study radiation more extensively in the space environment because it is to protect as efficiently as possible men and women who become astronauts. So this was regarding the radiation risks. Now about the crowdsourcing project and how the general public is involved in that.
So the way we study radiation's effects is not experimental because we want to invest in the highest level of science possible And that is the highest level of proof in science is systematic review, systematic literature review. It is not experimental. It is a review of the existing knowledge, a synthesis of the existing knowledge, building on the shoulder of giants kind of things. And the idea is to collect all the articles that could inform the sex differences in effects of space radiation's effects. And this includes thousands and thousands of papers. And going through all this knowledge, all this work, is very, very time-consuming and difficult. And that's how the idea of crowdsourcing came in, to involve the general public, to involve a crowd, to help us go through this tremendous amount of knowledge. And so far, it's a success.
That is great to hear. I'm really glad that the project is on its way to being successful and that the general public is so actively involved and interested. And, you know, I've seen you and the team do such a great job getting everyone together. You know, we have this like Discord channel that we use and is very collaborative. So I really commend the work that you guys are doing as even coordinators to bring everybody together. So that's really great to hear about. Now, my next question for you is regarding the study itself a little bit. So we're doing this comprehensive review, and I think what's interesting to explore is the implications of what comes out of the review. So if the study, in fact, does corroborate that, yes, there are significant sex differences, let's say that there's several articles that we do find that do hint towards a correlation to say that, yeah, there are sex differences between men and women for radiation, what might be some of the hypothetical or tangible outcomes for space policy? And I'd be curious about what does it mean for, like, you know, space technology? Are there going to be like specialized kinds of EMUs or you know, design spacesuits for women? If there is, you know, a restriction on the duration of EVAs or spacewalks that women can do, is it going to impact mission length? These are some of the things that I was thinking about. But since you're deeply involved in this work, I'd love to know what you guys are foreseeing as maybe some potential implications for space policy specifically.
Yeah, that's a great question. So as I said before, until very recently, there were different standards in, for instance, mission duration overall in space from NASA standards for astronauts. It's not the case anymore, because when looking at those Hiroshima and Nagasaki data and realizing that they might be incomplete and we still don't know enough to make completely informed decisions, the scientific recommendations were to now use only one standard, because we don't know enough to rationalize a difference in treatment between men and women regarding radiation protection in space. A result of our work is very unlikely to be all black or all white kind of thing. What's more probable is to have information on how differently men and women are affected. We know that there are physiological differences between sexes, between people with chromosome YYYX and chromosome XX in their biology, in medicine. For instance, some disease have different symptoms regarding if you're a woman or if you're a man. And it is unlikely that our study of those differences regarding radiation's effects are going to be all on one side or all on the other, that it's going to be women are absolutely more vulnerable than men or men are absolutely more vulnerable than women. What is a lot more likely is that we're going to learn on how they're affected differently for different outcomes. And we need to collect this data to inform the scientific community about knowledge gaps that may exist and that need to be investigated, and also to inform the space agencies. And while building this knowledge about how space radiation is affecting men and women, then we give them tools to protect astronauts better, because knowing the risks better is a big step in protecting people better. And regarding the operational decisions, this is way out of my range. I don't know, and it's going to depend a lot on the outcome of the study.
And I think the fact that you've highlighted that it's not going to be a black and white solution, there are still going to be more studies that are going to be required to really start refining some of those space policy pieces. So I understand that that's a very broad question. And this study is a small piece of the puzzle, but a really important piece to be able to get to some of those well-informed and data-driven space policy decisions. I want to pivot a little bit now and ask you about something different. So since we are a Canadian Space Society podcast, I have interviewed others, you know, at SpaceX and NASA, both American entities, but there's some differences that I'm learning about through the podcast and through my research as well between Canadian space, what's happening in obviously the US with commercial space kind of booming now, and the piece that I'm really curious about is Europe. So ESA obviously has a really strong foothold in the world space economy as well. So I was wondering, what are some differences that you've observed, or what are some traits of ESA that you think are really great in terms of a world platform and the work that you guys are doing? And the second part to that is, are there spaces to collaborate with other nations? Are there projects that you are currently doing, or are there just different ways, similar to the way that we're doing the crowdsource review method, which is open to everyone globally? Are there ways that ESA is really actively, firstly, making their foothold stronger, but also collaborating with other nations?
So ESA is already an international agency. It has 22 member states across Europe and collaborators. So in my view, in my experience, it is a great advantage. During my internship, I was lucky enough to meet people from very different backgrounds and geographical different backgrounds as well. So I have colleagues coming from Switzerland, Spain, Italy, Poland, all across Europe. And this is really amazing when you want to build a network and build collaborations, exchange ideas, exchange point of views and expertise. And I don't know exactly about the Canadian Space Agency, but ESA's program, from what I understand, is constructed by the member states paying ESA, but also getting benefits from ESA, for instance, in form of scientific programs, collaborations, education. I was invited in the ESA Academy a couple of weeks ago in physiology, human physiology in space training. And there as well, I met people from all over Europe. And that's one way that ESA is strongly engaging in the public. And I think that's, my opinion is that education is extremely important. And there is a strong will going towards vulgarization and opening knowledge to people. So ESA is basically a collaborating platform in itself, with strong scientific basis and collaboration with other entities, with MEDES, for instance, which is a part of the French Space Agency studying human physiology for space and running dry immersion studies and analog studies for physiology. There is a very strong scientific foothold. And now ESA is also engaged with NASA, collaborating in Artemis 1. That's an amazing collaboration. I'm looking forward very much to the future of European Space Agency in the couple 5-10 years. It's amazing. An amazing time to be interested in space. Right now, the crowdsourcing project that we are leading is the first one that involves the general public. And we made the decision to open it internationally. So we have in the crowd members from India, from Pakistan, from South Africa, from USA, from Canada, from Peru, from Norway, from really from China, from Japan, from all over the world. And that's really amazing to see. This is possible because the project is a systematic review. So it is analyzing public data. The data that we are working on is published in scientific papers. So it is not confidential in any way or sensitive in any way. It's public data. And that allows us to build international, really open collaborations. And that's great.
And it's amazing that it's also giving the general public a more hands-on approach. They're very active members and participants. Even people who, you know, call themselves citizen scientists can actually be involved in this kind of study and get more interested in space or make their contribution in that way. So I think that part is quite spectacular in terms of public engagement with the ESA and for even the ESA brand and all the work that ESA is doing with not just this project, but thousands of projects that they have. The next piece I want to ask you is, you're in the space medicine team at ESA. What are some other key or related space medicine projects that ESA is working on? So we have this one, which is looking at radiation. But are there other ones that are ongoing? That's the first question, and maybe have interdependencies on this one. And can the general public also be a participant in some of those?
So today we spoke about the systematic review of the scientific literature on sex differences regarding space radiation. There is another project that is also relying on crowdsourcing at the moment that is focused on the effects of space radiation on the central nervous system that are non-neoplastic, so effects on your nervous system that are not related to cancer.
For instance, if exposure to radiation beyond low Earth orbit puts one at risk of memory impairment, we want to know it. If exposure to radiation puts you at risk of cognitive impairment, messes with your reflexes, your behavior, or any other neurological issues, we want to know it. This review of neurological effects of radiation, we are also working on with crowdsourcing and with the general public. And that's also very interesting. All systematic literature reviews rely on public data and involve a massive amount of this public data that needs processing. I think that involving the general public is extremely relevant in those projects. The infrastructure that we are building now for crowdsourcing in space medicine, it can be reused and it could become a reliable system, strengthening knowledge in the space medicine field. More generally, the space medicine team is focused on helping humans thrive in space and stay healthy during space exploration.
And it's really great to hear about those other projects that are ongoing as well, and the fact that there's going to be expansion through each of these systematic reviews that we do. There's going to be more information that we learn and maybe more research paths that emerge out of that. So yeah, I want to thank you again for all of the amazing work that you're doing at ESA, and thank you for being on the podcast. That was my last question for you. I was wondering if there is any last or final notes that you would like to give the audience, or maybe students that are listening, maybe students who want to follow a similar career path to you, or just get interested in space in general.
So yeah, if you are in Europe with a European member state's citizenship, or if you are Canadian, or if you are American, or if you are from anywhere in the world and you are considering applying for an amazing opportunity, don't let anybody tell you that it's not cut out for you, and don't let anything hold you back. I applied a year ago for this internship, and it was one of the best things I ever did. It was an amazing experience, and I would never go back for anything really. I had a really amazing time. The crowdsourcing was also very eye-opening. It was amazing and really inspiring to see people from all around the world responding to the call, kind of science and trying to understand better the biology of the human body and how to explore the unknown. It was when we started the campaign, in 3 weeks we had 300 applicants, and it was really amazing. And
if you are interested in joining the crowdsourcing project, stay tuned. We are finalizing the preparation of logistics for the next phase, and very soon we will communicate about it and start recruiting citizen scientists again.
And thank you again for having me. It was an interesting experience, and I wish you the best as well.
Stay tuned for more exciting episodes from the Canadian Space Society. Bye.